We're working on a Wellness Wednesday, something that is just more than an hour this morning. We've got a major announcement, and I will tell you, I can't release it, but I can tell you it is the biggest deal in a long time. You're going to want to join us at 10:45 to hear Avera talk to us about why it is so important. Now, the story we've been working on since early in the week, our good friend, the Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg, called a news conference to talk about a concern that Iowa has involving the detection of highly pathogenic avian influenza from Texas and from Kansas. We turn to our best connection, Dwight Mogler, who follows a lot of Aggie things in the Hawkeye State, and he has shared a veterinarian. He has had him on earlier in the week, and this morning I get to talk to a lady that I should know. Dr. Beth Thompson, South Dakota State Veterinarian, Director of the South Dakota Animal Industry Board. She's been selected by her colleagues within the U.S. Animal Health Association to serve as the current president of our nation's state animal health officials. Dr. Thompson, that's a big deal.
Hey, good morning. It is a big deal. It's one of those groups that I am so proud to be part of.
So it's nice to know, and you have a little tie with South Dakota. You got a tie to Minnesota. We're talking about Iowa, and, you know, we could throw in the other 48 states this morning, and everybody would want to hear what you have to say. We got this Mogler guy. You know, he came bringing in rolls this morning. It's not ham, but, you know, for the most part, you know, it looks pretty good. Mogs, good to see you. Got behind a train, I hear.
Yeah, I wasn't predicting that, but made it in, Bill, and slid in here safely.
All right, between the two of you, just where are we right now? Mogs, if you will, tell us about the Ag Secretary. I understand he's going to talk with me on Friday to give us a little update, but what are we going to hear? What kind of things have been happening? And I did see something this morning by some farmer. Everybody's a good farmer, but he was complaining that who's bringing up this crap? Would you tell him?
Yeah, so I think that's the concern that producers have, is that this is not a threat to public health and food safety. And so we need to continue to make sure that the message facing the public is this is something that's infecting, potentially affecting livestock and ultimately the poultry flocks on the farms. But the barnyard's a big space, and we don't always understand, how viruses travel. We call that vectors and what the pathways are. We know biosecurity and biocontainment is of utmost importance and high priority on all of our farms, regardless of the species. But thankfully, we've got folks like Dr. Beth Thompson here in South Dakota, as well as our Dr. Jeff Kaizen, and of course, then the leadership from our State Department of Agriculture and our Animal Industry Board here in South Dakota that engage producers at all levels, because our first line of defense against animal disease is always at the farm level.
Dr. Thompson, got to ask you a question. Iowa jumped out, said some things we haven't heard from other states. Should we have heard, and will we hear?
And yes, that's exactly what has happened so far. Some states have gone to putting out news releases or press releases. Some states have not. I can speak for South Dakota here at the Animal Industry Board. We use our news releases mainly for current animal health issues in South Dakota. So if you take a look back through some of the news releases we've had, it's been anthrax has been found in South Dakota, or TB has been found in South Dakota. So with this emerging situation, we are really pointing to USDA and boots on the ground where it's happening. So that's the way we use our news releases, for things that are actually happening in our state.
All right. My question was, as I saw the release, saw what was happening, saw how Mike was being handled as far as what he could say, when he would say it, who he'd say it to, that it was like, okay, what's going on here? We have maybe just one cow someplace in Kansas, or five cows in Texas that have been spotted that have concerns. But, you know, we drink a lot of milk that comes from Iowa. in South Dakota, maybe from some of these other states. Should we be concerned? Would you feel safe drinking a glass of cold milk right now?
Of course I feel safe drinking a glass of cold milk or having a dish of ice cream. The amount of oversight our food has, and we can talk about dairy or we can talk about the rest of the food supply, is really significant. And pasteurization of our dairy, that's been around since, what, the 1920s? You know, prior to pasteurization, people would get sick and possibly die of tuberculosis, things like typhoid fever. That just doesn't happen anymore because we do have that oversight. So back to your question, absolutely, I had milk this morning.
Good. How about you, Moaks?
Yeah, well, I would only ditto the comments that Dr. Thompson makes. And again, I think that's the external message that we need to continue to ensure the general public is that, you know, not only is your milk safe, but your meat is safe. We have the safest food supply of anywhere in the world. And quite often, because we do that work so quietly, unfortunately, a lot of us don't even realize it's happening. So it's a great opportunity to just, you know, again, magnify that great benefit or advantage that we have in our food system has here in the United States.
You know, you're going to say Bill's a snoopy old fart. Old fart probably is right, but not snoopy enough. But I did see there was a note out that the ISU Dairy Extension was having a 7 o'clock meeting last night on the current dairy situation. The fact that they're having meetings doesn't mean there's anything that comes out of the meetings, but for the most part, people are trying to do what's right. Would you agree, Beth?
Yes, I think that's a really good point to be made, that folks are coming together and talking about the situation. I know here in South Dakota, the South Dakota dairy producers certainly have been part of discussions. They're also part of Midwest Dairy, a bigger regional group that are having discussions. I've been on the phone with our veterinary diagnostic lab, with some of our veterinarians, with producers. And I should have mentioned this up front, I have a dairy producer that sits on my board. And that was one of the first phone calls, even before we heard about the highly pathogenic avian influenza in the milk, the fact that there was something concerning going on down in the southern part of the United States, I was talking with my board member about that. So the conversations have been going on for quite a period of time.
You know, I've spent a lot of time with Dwight this week, and one of the things we talked about was migratory birds, and we also talked about pork being an issue. I think I saw a note someplace that Minnesota has a horse that somehow was affected by it. But for the most part, we got to keep an eye on it. We just never know.
Well, yeah, the conversation we were having earlier, Bill, was HPAI is only one pathogen or one disease that obviously has a very, very detrimental impact to the flocks of you know, the poultry, whether it be layers, whether it be turkeys, whether it be broilers. But every species has endemic disease that we see on a regular basis. But then the thing that we are always trying to be prepared for would be the godforsaken event if we have a foreign animal disease event, and the one that in the swine industry that we worry about immensely is African swine fever. So again, the vigilance, the biosecurity, the biocontainment, all of the preparation and preparedness that we can do so that we could isolate and snuff out any disease that would ever potentially happen here is critically important. And again, your first line of defense is the people on the farm.
Beth, if you will, with the fact that you serve as a president, is that a nationwide thing? I assumed that it was.
Yes, it is. It is.
So when you would have something like this, whether it's this case or something that maybe happened in Colorado or happened in Ohio or wherever it was, is it the kind of thing that vets would talk about, the board would talk about, make sure that the public is aware of everything?
Yeah, so the NASAHO group, the National Assembly of State Animal Health Officials, we have monthly meetings, just general, and we bring up agenda items that might be concerning for different states, different regions. But also, since the beginning of highly pathogenic avian influenza in poultry, going back to February 2022, We also have meetings every month to discuss that. In addition to that, and I can't emphasize this enough, we all pick up our phones and call somebody. So if I have a question about something that's happening, say, in one of my neighboring states, I'll call Minnesota, I'll call Nebraska, and we'll have those discussions and then bring them to the to a higher level if need be. We have that relationship that's ongoing throughout the year, and then we have at least one in-person meeting every year.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, Dr. Thompson, it just triggers my memory of the collaboration that goes on between the states is absolutely impressive and incredible. The time there we met here nearly 4 years ago in Worthington, there wasn't a disease situation that affected livestock, but it was the debacle with the COVID-19 shutting down harvest capacity, and the state veterinarian communities working together and trying to figure out how we were going to handle the animal welfare crisis that we had with not being able to harvest animals in a timely fashion. And that's where we met in Worthington that particular day. And there was officials, I think, from three states meeting in Worthington, Minnesota, when we met back in that day in May of 2020.
All right. Being a reporter, I always like to close the book on a case. So are we going to close the book on what may have happened in Kansas and Texas? And who would be telling us that it's been handled, we're okay?
So I think we are still in the first couple of chapters of the book. The release that came out from the United States Department of Agriculture, Veterinary Services, VS, on Monday was that this is a rapidly evolving situation. And I might be famous for the saying, I don't know, but I don't know what I don't know. And I think what USDA Veterinary Services, state animal health officials in Texas and Kansas and some of these other states are working really hard right now to figure out where this virus may be getting into these dairies, if there is any way that we can keep the virus out of these dairies. And because these dairies have been seeing some of this ongoing morbidity, you know, up to 10% of the lactating cows going off feed, milk production going down, is there something else that's going on? And I think there are additional chapters to this book that we need to get through.
One of the things I was told this morning, I mentioned we were going to have you on the air, and Tom Rooney, who's been around the state for a long time, said, you're going to actually get to talk to Beth Thompson? I said, yeah. He said, she is a good one. If she says something, believe it.
Much appreciated.
Well, I think the same was said about Dr. Thompson when she was in Minnesota. I don't know if you know the full backstory here, Bill, but Dr. Dusty Otakovin, who preceded Dr. Thompson, he actually, we hijacked him, the National Pork Board did, and he serves as our chief veterinary officer for the National Pork Board and is in Des Moines. So Beth was actually able to return to her home state of South Dakota, and so here she is today, and obviously she was very well thought of in the state of Minnesota as well.
All right. If something comes up between now and Friday, we want to hear from you. I'm supposed to hear from Mike Nag on Friday. We'll do that. But appreciate all that you've said this week. We're just doing it in the form of information. And South Dakota was not really covering it at this point. We should be. We should be watching.
Thanks,
Bill. Thank you.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful?
Well, we got that Brent balloon. You're not floating out there in a balloon this morning, are you? It's 7 degrees out there, young man. What's going on?
Good morning, Bill. No, not today. Just a little too cold for that, that's for sure.
Well, I would guess that would be a part of planning. You certainly wouldn't want to be out in 7 degrees high up in a balloon, would you?
No, not at all.
All right, this time of year, though, you know, we're looking at the prices, we're looking at weather. What else are you working with those in ag on right now to make sure that they have the best plan for the year?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the time of year that's exciting. You know, one, we've got pretty well the renewals for this upcoming year done. So it's a chance for us to look at new opportunities and help with some new potential projects. So we do have an expansion. We have a purchase that we're working on now. So finding the best route that we can do and help them with to put them in the best position to succeed. But, you know, the planning stuff, especially on the ag side, is I think you talked about it already here, is not having a farm bill is, you know, something to keep an eye on. You know, some concerns that we see this year that maybe we haven't in the last couple is, you know, the lower commodity prices, you know, the higher interest rates, in some cases some lower, but some higher input costs. So those are all things to manage through and to help reduce risk. You know, something we're talking to borrowers about is, you know, marketing their crops and locking in, you know, for sure profits. So it's a challenging time, just like any time of year, is to planning for the future.
Well, whether you're a young person planning and an older person planning, just do some planning. Can they go to their favorite plane and say, hey, help us?
Absolutely. Whether it's a consumer, whether it's commercial, whether it's ag, we'd be more than happy to always sit down, talk through what you're looking to do and see what we can do to add value and see if we can help you out.
All right, so how would they reach you if they need a plan, want to get it done, want to get it scheduled?
Sure. You can call me at 605-681-2396, or you can visit our website at plainscommerce.com to find me or one of my fellow employees here.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. We appreciate you.
Sounds great. Thanks, Bill.
Jerry Idy, FFA of South Dakota. It's been a while since we've talked. In fact, Jerry is... We did lose Jerry for just a minute. I was going to talk about the fact that I did talk about her on stage out in Arizona in front of 500 people about how what they're doing is so fabulous for our young people, hoping that the other 49 states would do all the things that Jerry Idy is doing for FFA, for us, for our future as well. Jerry joins us right now, and we've got Shelby with her. Jerry, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Last time I talked with you, we were in Arizona.
Yes, we were. Been busy for both of us, I'm sure, since then. We're busy preparing for our State FFA Agri-Science Fair and our upcoming State FFA Convention.
Shelby has joined us this morning. What do the two of you want to share with our audience?
You bet. So this morning, Shelby Pankratz from Parker, she's a State Star Farmer finalist, and with her is Natalie Haas, also from Parker, and she's a State Star and Ag Placement finalist. So two very outstanding, hard-working young ladies who can share a little bit about what being a star finalist means and all the hard work that went into their projects to get them to this level of success.
All right, Shelby, you were the first one to the party. What are you doing to have the success? Make sure that Parker is in the bright spotlight.
Well, I do a lot of work outside of school with my cattle herd that I've slowly been progressing with, and it's exciting to get to be one of the finalists for the Star Farmer Award, as it does show how much work us farmers and ranchers put in outside of school hours and how much we are working outside of just not only the school, but our homework and making sure everything gets done on time. And we have more responsibility than just getting our homework done. We have animals to make sure that they are surviving.
So we've got Natalie with Shelby right now. Natalie, we've kind of heard one version of what it's taking. What are you going to do to try to get that Star Farmer Award?
Like Shelby said, you don't just get the award when you go to the interview. It starts way beforehand when you work and you put in the hours and you're learning new things and you're always trying to help improve the farm. And it also takes a lot of time and effort to fill out the applications for these awards. And I know Shelby and I have both worked really hard on our applications, and we'd like to thank our advisor, Mrs. Dunkelberger, for helping us fill out all of our applications, because it takes a lot of time and hours to put into your project, but it also takes a lot of time to fill out the applications as well.
Shelby and Natalie with us this morning, along with Jerry Eide. One of the things that we're constantly sharing, whether it be here or at an Arizona conference or whatever it is, or with you, is passing the torch to you guys. Do you guys want the torch? If so, what are you going to do with it in the future?
I would say yes, we'd like to get past the torch sometime here soon. We look forward to helping improve our agriculture industry. There's always ways we can improve technology and be more productive with our animals and crops. And we also, in the future, would like to promote our industry to everyone. Not everyone is connected to agriculture, so it'd be nice to teach others about the industry that we love and know so much about.
Jerry, when we listen to Shelby, we listen to Natalie, I just see those star qualities there. And again, I see them from my little country town, and Parker is what we got in the spotlight this morning. You got a lot of those country towns in South Dakota.
We do. We have FFA chapters in 111 school districts across the state, and most of them are in those little towns. A few are in the larger communities, but it's really fun, those little towns that bring up great leaders that are willing to step up, advocate for agriculture, as the girl said, and take on that challenge of feeding the world.
All right, Natalie, Shelby, which one of you wants the final word? Don't both talk at once. You going to let Shelby go first?
Yep.
All right, Shelby, you got to do the wrap-up. Why is this so important to you, to Natalie, to Jerry, to the 40-some that you have right there, or 111, as we just heard a number. But for the most part, we need a lot of people that we can pass the torch to, so the next generation will be able to pass the torch as well.
This is important for me, especially because this is all I've known all my life. I've lived on my family ranch since I was born. And I've been working on it since I can remember, and I've learned a lot over the years, and I think it's important to advocate for that and teach others about what we're doing and showing how we're making improvement in the industry and even on the world.
Well, I believe in FFA. I don't mind talking about it to 49 other states, and we're going to keep doing it, if it's all right with you, Jerry.
Absolutely.
Yep. From the Reeves Building Studios in downtown Sioux Falls, 50-plus years serving the region. Bright sunshine, make it last, and make it Reeves. Matt Swenson, Swenson Commodities, has the kickoff on this side of the clock. The grains, the meats, the energy. What are you seeing this morning, Matt?
A little lower prices in a couple of the grains, kind of a quiet market. The cattle after a volatile session yesterday, but corn's down 4.25 here. Beans are down 6.5 cents today. Wheat's up 1.5 cents. Cattle price up 25 cents at 183.35 in the April contract, down 17 in June, however, at 178. 20. Feeder cattle up 72 cents in April at 246.17. We're $10 higher in gold. Silver's down a penny here. Stock market's up 7 in the S&P, down 48 in the NASDAQ, 189 higher in the Dow Jones. Crude oil's at 81.47, down 15 cents today. The hogs are up 55 cents, and I think that does it. There you
All
have
right.
It.
People have questions. They want numbers right now. How do they get them?
They can give us a call at 605-335-5570.
All right. Appreciate you. Be careful out there.
You bet, too.
Jamie Wood, SBA of South Dakota, is joining us this morning. What you got for us?
Hello, everybody. I have a few updates of some upcoming events. So as we make our way through Easter weekend, we're looking ahead at next week. We've got many training opportunities for small businesses. So on April 2nd, which is next Tuesday, at 9 o'clock Central Time, there is a tri-state webinar, which is between Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota SBA district offices and our Apex Accelerator offices. And this one is going to be called Learning About SBA's Mentor Protege Program and Joint Ventures. So for this one, it's really wonderful to have a free advisor to leverage for small businesses that are navigating government contracting and business growth. Small businesses can learn from an experienced government contractors through that SBA's mentor-protege program. This is something we're marketing across the nation as an added value to small businesses. Protégés can get valuable business development help from their mentors in many areas, including guidance on internal business management systems, accounting, marketing, manufacturing, and strategic planning, financial assistance in the form of equity investments, loans, and bonding, assistance navigating federal contracting bidding and acquisition and the federal procurement process. This is, you know, these are challenging areas for small businesses that are trying to navigate through the federal procurement, that government contracting space. A mentor can also help with education about international trade and strategic planning and finding markets. We find that there is a very strong nexus between what's needed from a small business to get into government contracting, but also into international exports. So if you prepare for one, you've done a lot of the preparation for the, you know, the other portfolio. Business development includes strategy and identifying contracting and partnership opportunities. Sometimes your mentor can actually introduce you to, you know, an in-person contact for that supply chain, whether it's government contracting or exporting. So it's really good to leverage a mentor. This is next Tuesday, 9 o'clock Central Time. Please register for it. It's free. It's a great way to build your business revenue and your wealth and your employee base. So sba.gov/South Dakota, all one word, sba.gov/South Dakota. There's a calendar on there. Open it up. Look for April 2nd and you'll see it. Click on a link and there's a registration link right there. Also coming up, we're going to continue our Money Smart series in April. We're going to round off the series. It's been a multi-week series of financial-related topics. These are designed by FDIC and SBA to educate small business owners on the requirements for starting and managing a business. So coming up in closer to mid-April, April 10th, this one is called Tax Planning and Reporting. So you can learn how to identify the tax requirements of a small business and its owner and how to establish a plan to account and pay for small business taxes. And then following the next week on April 17th, this one is super important for rural areas like South Dakota. This one's called Selling Your Business and Succession Planning. So we do know that, you know, upwards of 70 or 80% of small business owners do not have that turnover plan. You know, who's going to be the next owner so the business can keep going and the employees can keep getting paid? So we want to make sure that people have the information to, you know, do that successful succession planning. It's never too early to start, even if you're 20 years away from wanting to sell your business. How much time we have?
About 4.5.
Okay, great. I've got a couple of other important updates for you to share. Still pushing the Thrive CEO leadership cohort applications. We're accepting these through April 28th. We have room for 20 in the Sioux Falls cohort, which is going to start in June. It's a six-month free cohort. This one is designed with business owners, the leaders of the business and the decision cycle. So we're talking CEOs, operations managers. Even if you don't own the small business, but you are in the decision cycle as running that small business, we would love to have you in this cohort. It's going to be a mix of online and in-person training. So there will be some objectives that you have to complete online and participate in, like, you know, some homework. And then there's also 8 in-person meetings over the 6 months, basically once a month. Fantastic training. We had a really successful class last year in Sioux Falls that graduated in December. And we would love to open that up to small businesses of all industries. So please do look at that. You can apply for that at sbathrive.com. All right, this next update is very important. And this is kind of looking to the past for loans that were taken out during the pandemic. These were called COVID-19 economic injury disaster loans. But we're talking about where we're at right now. So we did over 8,000 of these across the state. And between 2021 and 2022, borrowers for these COVID EIDL loans were small businesses, agricultural producers, and nonprofit organizations across the state. And these loans went up to $2 million. There were 30 months of deferral payments on these. We're kind of getting to that end window of those deferments. So anybody who took out a COVID EIDL loan later in 2022, you're going to be getting to that payment window starting pretty soon. So please be on the lookout for that. So we deferred these payments initially to help the borrowers stabilize financially because of these economic challenges that were caused during the pandemic. Well, now that we're, you know, well inside of this window where payments are due, we want to make sure listeners who are COVID-19 EIDL borrowers are sure to get into your My SBA account. So you can just use your favorite search engine to look for My SBA if you don't have an account, and you can establish one. If you have one, be sure to go in there and visit, because I know, you know, after 30 months of not having to make a payment, you may not really have it on your radar, but we don't want you to get in trouble. So check your loan and payment status in My SBA. This loan was direct from the federal government. I want to remind everybody, you know, the U.S. Department of Treasury is the owner of these loans. We facilitated them. The U.S. Small Business Administration facilitated these EIDL loans during COVID-19, but this is a direct-to-government loan, and payments must be made and kept current. What we've been finding, especially like in the ag sector, is typically SBA doesn't do, you know, the disaster response lending to the ag sector. That's usually done through USDA, but during COVID-19, it was just easier on the federal government for SBA to process, you know, all of these. And so many times ag producers are used to making maybe one or two lump sum payments a year on some of these government or non-government loans that they have. And so for EIDL, it's different. You have to make monthly payments or it's going to show that you are in a default status. And so we want to make sure that, you know, everybody's getting into My SBA and checking that out. All these loans and repayment, including past due loans, are eligible for a program that we have for people that may be going into the default status. And so if you're more than 120 days late on a payment, and if it hasn't been sent to Treasury for extra collection steps yet by SBA, this generally occurs after people are 180 days late on a payment. We want to make sure that you know that there's a program that SBA is offering to help anybody who may be having, you know, a tough time making their payments. So give us a call at 605-330-4243. Visit us online at sba.gov/South Dakota. We're here to help you at SBA South Dakota. Have a great week.
Yes, you are. Jamie Wood, SBA. When we get back, what was the big announcement from Avera? That's nice. Well, we've been telling you about it, but couldn't say much about it. That's an awkward spot for a broadcaster to be in or a reporter of any kind. But Avera, the headline, announces largest building project in its history. Tamara Larson, Engel, last name?
Engel Keys.
Oh, my gosh.
Engel Keys.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a big one.
All right. And it's a big name, but tell us why we're saying it's so big.
Well, we are so excited to be announcing today this project. It's multifactorial. So we are in the process of moving forward with a 6-story tower addition on the Avera McKinnon main campus here in Sioux Falls. That particular 6-story tower addition will house a new women's and children's hospital for our mothers and their children. And then we are also going to be standing up a 3-story building at the Avera Louise campus that will allow us to expand our GI services, our digestive health services, into that particular space, and that would then, and on the back end, allow orthopedics to expand in the existing specialty hospital space. So very exciting project here in front of us, and with it, we also are so excited that we are going to be able to feature a brand new front entrance to the main campus hospital here.
As I read through, and it was a well-written release, that the rapid growth of the Sioux Falls community made it possible, and it makes it exciting.
It sure does. We've seen a decade over decade that Sioux Falls is growing at about a 25% rate, a decade over decade for the past several decades. So we are so excited as our population grows, as we have more families and individuals choosing to come to Sioux Falls or a metro service area, that we are going to be able to expand. A grand total at the end of the day will be adding 158 new patient beds with this facility expansion. So we are incredibly excited to be able to serve our community.
All right. So obviously you guys have studied this. You know what the traffic is as far as your hospitals are concerned and what the health needs are as well.
Yes, we absolutely have. So it's multifactorial. With the women's and children's six-story addition, we know that women, mothers, females are a huge driver when it comes to making healthcare decisions for their families as it relates to the future. So we want to continue to serve our mothers and their children and that those populations as we move forward. But what we've also encountered here as we've come out of the pandemic these past several years, our volumes in the med-surg space have continued to grow exponentially. So with this project, with the opening of the new space for women and children, we'll be able to vacate existing spaces and convert those rooms to rooms that will be able to care for patients who are requiring medical or surgical care here. So yes, a lot of intensive study looking at population growth, demographics, what types of specialties are we serving here in our community.
Here's what I would ask. With the growth that you've had and what you're seeing, you're going to need more nurses. You're going to need more people to work the hospital. And my guess is you probably know where you're going to get them.
Well, we absolutely know that that is something that we are going to need to be very, very mindful about as we navigate forward. One of our highest priorities as a health system here at Avera is our RN workforce. And so we have already moved into a space of very active, multidimensional planning as it relates to how do we interest individuals in the healthcare and nursing profession, but then also how are we partnering with our educational institutions and our schools of nursing across our region, quite frankly, so that we become the employer of choice for these healthcare individuals as they're moving throughout their schooling journey. So we know that we've got a little bit of a hill to climb when we add all of these beds, but we are very mindful and intentional about that already and are moving forward in a really good way.
And the note I read shows that construction expected to begin in mid to late summer with both campuses, and that you are making a change with Plaza 3. Tell us about that.
Correct. So on our main campus, currently in Plaza 3, we have our chronic dialysis, our endocrinology, hepatology, several different specialties that are in that space that we are going to be moving into some new spaces here in Sioux Falls. And so after we get them all relocated and settled in their new spaces, we will be removing Plaza 3 from the campus. And then we will be using that space where Plaza 3 currently exists as the space for the new six-story tower. That six-story tower will actually attach to or be directly linked into our existing hospital infrastructure. So it will be a contiguous building running east to west.
You know, what I also see, I'm a number guy, 20,500 employees and physicians, 300 locations. A lot of people wouldn't have known that. In 100 communities in a 5-state region. They just don't have to come to Sioux Falls.
You are correct about that. One thing that we are exceptionally proud of as a health ministry here at Avera Health is that we want to honor all of the spaces that all of those 300 locations exist in our 37 hospitals. And so if we are able to keep our patients and close to their families, close to their hometown, that is absolutely our goal as a healthcare ministry. We have an amazing collaboration across all of our regional sites and our rural sites. And so it doesn't mean that everybody has to come to Sioux Falls. We want to be able to provide those tertiary and very specialized level of care services here to individuals who need it here in Sioux Falls. But if it's feasible, we would absolutely advocate for and invite our patients to be close to their communities and families.
We appreciate you sharing. We're going to continue with Ronald Place, the regional president and CEO of Avera McKinnon, on Friday. We appreciate you guys sharing this with us this morning. We appreciate what you're doing healthcare-wise for our area. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we got Todd Epp with us. We got a new beginning with Avera. They're doing some expansion. But we did a little close down in Pier this week. We got about 4 or 5 minutes. What did we do during the session?
Well, I tried to think about this in terms of themes, and the things I came up with were marijuana, guns, money, and cats. How's that for a list?
What?
Cats.
That's what I thought you said.
My favorite bill was the trap-neuter release bill that I think was largely due to folks in Sioux Falls but other places in the state where they passed, I think it was, I can't remember the bill number, but you can now legally trap a feral cat, take it to the vet, get it neutered, and release it that'll be as of July 1st. So if you do that now, before the legislation was passed, you would be committing the crime of abandoning an animal. So it'd be like putting your dog in the car and letting them out in the countryside and letting some farmer take care of them. So I thought that was a rather interesting bill by Representative Linda Duba, a Democrat. And then my second favorite bill was, because it's the two big themes, the legislature, for the most part, hates marijuana. They haven't seemed to care what the public has thought about it. But they do love guns, and so it came to fruition in a bill that if you go into a dispensary and you have a medical marijuana card, they have to put up notices now that tells you you cannot legally purchase a firearm under federal law because you are now a marijuana user, and marijuana is illegal under federal law. So that was a nice combination of two of the big themes, I thought, in that bill.
So as we talk a little bit about the session, one thing that Casey Crabtree shared with us earlier in the week was that they would set the topics for the summer study. Is that a big deal?
Yes and no. You know, sometimes some major legislation can come out of that. Sometimes it's like, well, that's nice, thank you, and then the report becomes a doorstop somewhere. So it really depends on the topic and how strong leadership backs it. At least that's my opinion.
So leadership that you expect to be in place by the time the start in 2025, January 14th?
Well, it really depends on re-election, and some people are term limited. There was, as I thought about this, a couple of people that came to mind. I don't know if Will Mortensen is going anywhere as majority leader in the House. Representative Rehfeld from Sioux Falls, who is the assistant, I think is an up-and-coming person to keep an eye on. And then over on the Democratic side, Aaron Healy in the House. They've both very active, and so we could be in an interesting situation where we have maybe, again, depends what Mortensen wants to do, but two women in the House, it could be the majority-minority leader. There's going to be a lot of turnover. 30 to 40% of the legislature will be new, and that's because of term limits, and then some people just get tired of it. Lee Schoenbeck, senator from Watertown, is president pro tem, is not coming back. And he's had, I don't know, two or three different stints in the legislature. He won't be back. And he's called the Senate King for good reason. So somebody else will be taking that position. I don't know who that might be at this time, but he's done his time. He's going to go spend time with his hunting dogs, I suppose. He's a big hunter.
Teachers' pay was a big deal. Pipeline, still a big deal. Where are we going?
Well, the big so-called compromise is going to be, could be referred if they get 17,000 signatures that they need by towards the end of June. Lots of pipeline bills came and went, and the so-called compromise passed. Apparently it made no one happy, which probably means it's a pretty good compromise. But, yeah, that did take up some time, not as much time as it did, I think, last year. And part of that was because of, I think, the PUC kind of put the hammer down on the applicants between the sessions. And what was your other point, Bill? What was
Well, we talked pipeline. We talked teachers' pay.
Oh, teacher pay. Yeah, I think the legislature really wanted to send the school districts a message that would say, when we fund increased funding education and we give you an X, whatever the raise is this year, 4%, we want that to go to the teachers. We don't want that going to the administrators. We don't want you putting that in your capital outlay fund. We want that going to teachers. And they made that expressly clear this year. And I think the governor also shares that point of view. So we'll see how that works. There's going to be a committee that looks at the districts and how they're spending their money and if they're coming at least close to the $45,000 a year salary.
Todd Epp, we appreciate all that you do. You're a legislative reporter. You know what you're doing. You've been to other states in South Dakota. Just one more. We appreciate you. And for now, though, our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at